We have a bit of a VIP guest today, actually, which I've been trying to line up for a while, and it is the amazing Mark Wogan. If you don't know Mark, Mark is actually the founder, creative director of Home Slice Pizza, and I'm sure you know all about that. Home Slice was a real revolution in the way that the pizzas were massive, the toppings were opulent and luxurious, and also when you had a bottle of wine, it was sort of house wine out of a draft tap, that then at the end of the meal, the bottle was measured, the oversized bottle was measured, and that's how much you paid, depending on what you drank out of the bottle. Mark has also went on to even bigger things, working at Simplicity Foods with Neil Rankin and his brother Alan. Also, of course, a very, very famous dad and the greatest broadcaster that ever lived, Terry Wogan. So I hope that we get a little bit of chat about radio and TV and broadcasting and podcasting, and obviously his dear father also. Mark has now found even more fame by getting into podcasting and doing an amazing job. It really is one of my go-to podcasts every single week. I can't wait for it to drop in. It's called Spooning. It's a nice tight format, really nice, short and sharp, more like an entertainment show, really, and really exciting every week because the guests are, you know, people like Hairy Bikers, God rest Dave, obviously, Claudia Winkleman, Jimmy Carr, You Inventors, and people like that. So real high caliber. You want to tune in for it. And they discuss all things food, loves and hates. And with it being called Spooning, he serves up things that people like and don't like, but they have them blindfolded and they discuss how people feel about having those things and all of the stories and memories attached to that. So absolutely fantastic. Definitely check it out if you can. Here's the episode with Mark. A little bit nervous because he's very, very, very polished in the broadcasting world, but I'm really excited to have the chat and I'll see you on the flip side.
Supersonic.
Welcome to Supersonic Hospitality Marketing with me, Mark McSee, where we meet the most interesting people in hospitality, marketing, business, and beyond to hear tips, tricks, and tales to help your brand boom. This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. And now, here's a quick word from our sponsors. Vita Mojo is proud to be the headline sponsor of the Supersonic Marketing Podcast. Vita Mojo transforms chaos into confidence for hospitality operators worldwide, empowering brands to streamline order management and take control of their business. With its flexible end-to-end order management system, Vita Mojo gives you one central place to manage your menu across every channel, brand, and location. But Vita Mojo is much more than an out-of-the-box software solution. The Vita Mojo team are with you every step of the way, providing the partnership you need, the technology you want, and the experience your guests deserve, all in one place. Vita Mojo will help you adapt to whatever the world throws at your hospitality business. For more information, visit vitamojo.com/supersonic.
Hi everyone, I'm Lucy, Head of Sales at Airship and Toggle. Hopefully you've heard of us before, but in case you're not sure what we do, let me bring you up to speed. Airship is a leading hospitality marketing CRM, supporting operators by building a better understanding of their customers' visiting habits to help them target, personalise and automate their marketing and deliver a return on investment. And Toggle, which is our gift card platform and generated a whopping £48 million for the sector in 2023 through the sale of prepaid gift cards, experiences, tickets, merchandise and so much more. I'm here to tell you a little secret though. Airship CRM have a huge update coming, which is going to change hospitality marketing in 2024, making it faster and stronger than ever before. If you want to learn a little bit more before we launch, just get in touch with me on lucy@airship.co.uk, or you can visit our website to learn more about what we do for hospitality at airship.co.uk.
So it gives me the most big spooning, little spooning pleasure ever to introduce my next guest, who is co-founder of Home Slice Pizza, co-founder of Simplicity Foods, and host of one of the best newest podcasts in the UK and beyond, Spooning with Mark Wogan. And of course, it's Mark Wogan. Hi.
Hello there. How are you?
Really good, really excited to be here.
We need to determine, are you the big spoon or the big spoon? Maybe we can mix and match. Let's see other conversations.
What is it the kids say in dating sites? They're a switch, I think, is the terms for these things.
Thank God I've never had to go up that.
I've just recently been into it.
Have you?
Mm.
How's that been?
Now good.
Initially terrifying.
Divorced about 3 years ago and then went into the wonderful world of online dating. And then what happens is you sort of are like a kid in a sweet shop and go mad. And then you get vertigo and go, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, I don't know any of these people. And then you sort of, in terms of...
What's your preferred portal? Is that what you call it?
Site, app or whatever, yeah. So there was four in the main. So Match and all that, forget it, unless they want to sponsor me. That's like a nursing home, you know, waiting for God or whatever. or Godo. So then you've got...
Or in other parlance, the odds are good, but the goods are wrong.
That's true. Well, and depends what your kink is, you know, if that's your thing. So there's a couple of... Well, so Bumble is nice and safe, and also it's kind of female forward, so the power's with the females, which is good. Hinge was reasonably good, although it does make me feel a bit weird, the reason for it being Hinge. It's like a hinge on a door, and just that was like the crappiest brand name ever. Yeah. Tinder's like the Wild West.
Yeah.
Absolute nuts. And there's a new one called Field. Have you seen this?
No.
Right.
I have no call for it. I've been with the same woman for 25 years.
Congratulations. Yeah. Does she feel the same? I don't know.
Yes. Although I will always say, if you've been with someone that long, you've been divorced at least twice. It's just nobody left. especially when you're married to someone in my industry.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you're never there, right? And weekends and all that. But so Field is like a sex positive site. So, you know, if you go in some of them, it's kind of like, I'm a mum of two and I like this and da da da. This is like...
You can list all your peccadillos.
Yeah. So the normal sites are a mum of two, da da da. This one is going, I like dressing up with, you know, budgies flying around me in a bin bag, if we go back to the old Mary White's experience stuff. Or I like, there was this one lady, she was all kind of done up in S&M stuff, and this seems to be the thing as well. And she's like, I like wrestling. But she never said what kind, but I can imagine.
Did she look like she could hold it? I mean, you know, you're a robust individual. Do you think she could hold her own?
She would pin me down and spit me out as bubbles, I think. So the most successful one's been Bumble. Mm-hmm. And I met someone 4 months ago and it's still going good. I'm seriously punching.
Do you have a point where you mutually agree to delete the apps?
Or
are you hedging your bets?
No, you're not, because you'll get found out. And I live in Brighton, and it's a very village city, right? Like, everyone knows everyone. So you wouldn't do that. I think she was maybe on the free. I think, yeah, she was kind of, so it didn't really matter. But with me, it was like paid and whatever, and I still had some months to go. So yeah, I just deleted it straight away.
Because weirdly, was it last week? I think it was last week. And it comes out in a couple of weeks' time. I interviewed matchmaking expert Paul C. Brunson of Celebs Go Dating fame and Married at First Sight. And this is a man who, he knows everything about getting people together. And I asked him the question, because the thing that confuses me from an observer point of view about dating sites is you look for people who are the same as you. Whereas in the words of Paula Abdul, opposites attract, right?
Was it DJ Scat Cat or something like this? Well, has that got the thing in the background?
I just got that Paula Abdul song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, is that?
Forward two steps back.
Yeah, I think he was in opposite. The video. There was an animated Roger Rabbit thing going on, yeah.
Yeah, correct.
But I think with the dating site, I don't know. I mean, but then there's other ways. Hospitality's out the window, right? This is a much better podcast. So in terms of the dating sites, there's people that gamify it as well, right? So literally what they do, and I mean it in the true sense of the word, is they will just like everyone.
Right.
And see what comes back, and then they judge.
That's sort of...
It's quite clever.
From my generation, that's the guy who walked around the bar and asked everyone if he could buy them a drink on the odds that eventually someone would say yes.
Yes. And also, I think...
My mother would describe that person as having a neck like a jockey's...
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I used to have a friend, and his line was, he's really kind of, he's a really big nose. It was almost like in the Grease, you know, at the start of Grease was the cartoon, and the curtains are down, the nose is out and all that. And he would go up to women up in Scotland, and he would say to them, "You're as ugly as I am." That's his opening line.
Wow.
If you haven't found anyone by the end of the night, I'll meet you. And invariably, he went home with someone.
God.
Quite incredible. I mean, but this was 30 years ago. But yeah, so the dating thing is just, yeah, wild, wild. But yeah, I'm really glad I've found someone. So yeah, let's see how we go. We could do a part two.
I wish you all best. We'll come together in a few months for an update.
Yes, yes. Let's do that. Dating with Mark Wogan.
Yeah, no, it could be in the next part podcast. Dating with Mark and Mark.
Oh, there we go. Let's do it. Yeah. There we go. So how's it all going with the podcast stuff? So I mean, it just exploded onto the scene. The guest list is to die for. The format's so tight as well. Like, you know, as a nerd. And also you seem to pack a lot in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, for me, it sort of came about through a weird series of coincidences. And we started recording them and filming them, because they're on YouTube as well, in November of last year. Mm-hmm. And we sort of managed to do sort of one a week. So we actually got quite a lot in the can or on the digital card. And it's been so much fun. I mean, look, those of us in hospitality will know that it's been certainly more fun than the last 4 years in our industry. And it's been a really nice respite from that. Yeah. I mean, I still love our industry, and it is, I think, one of the best places to work in the world, because what I always say about it is, if you are a perfectionist or a control freak, it's the best industry for you, because every so often you can get really close and perfect and feel like you've controlled things, which is an illusion in life, as we know, but it's an illusion that is available to you in the hospitality, whether you're in a kitchen or you're running a floor.
Yeah,
it can all just come together in that most fantastic balletic way. And it just is the best. It's one of the best feelings in the world. If I'm ever feeling a bit like, oh, God, I can't do
it. Yeah, can we bother?
I go to the original home slice site in Neil's Yard, because it's kind of, not by design, purely by accident, it's a perfect little restaurant, because it's a box. You can see every corner of it, and it just works. Mm. I mean, obviously, we get it wrong occasionally, because nobody's perfect, and but it just is one of those places I can go in there. It's got a great vibe, can enjoy it, and it's a great feeling.
I love that restaurant. I went, you know, way back at the beginning, and a couple of things happened. I used to work at Yo Sushi, and I went with my marketing manager, and she's tiny. Tiniest wee
she's perfect
thing. Yes, absolutely. But we ended up sitting, we got in eventually. I think we sat outside. Stood outside? Can't remember. And then we went in. But anyway, it was just comical seeing the size of the pizza sort of next to her. And then she had like one and a bit slices, and she's like, I'm done. But the top.
She must have the appetite of a small bird. I would say it's huge, but it's easy to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
Which could be construed in various ways. I can eat a whole one. See?
Yeah. But it was the toppings that just blew my mind. And I don't know if I'm imagining this, but did you? Yeah, haggis is a topping, right?
We did.
Yes.
We did.
Yeah, I do remember that.
I mean, we've cycled through some extraordinary toppings. We approach it from the point of view that if all the flavours will go together on a spoon, it will go on a pizza. And because we're not Italian, we're not held to any rules. And it's always just been a focus on the quality of ingredients. So right from the outset, it was about taking the ubiquitous thing of a pizza and just doing it better, injecting a bit of culinary integrity into it. Because prior to that, there was very few people, if any, you know, maybe with the exception of Pilgrim's Boys and Frank and Mankin when they started out, who were really like, no, we're just going to do this better.
Yeah, well,
you know. Yeah. And I think, because we, you know, we're going to be 11 years old today, and I still love it. I still eat it 2-3 times a week, and it's I can still feel like I can stand by the product in terms of the quality of it.
That's important. And also, I seem to remember you measured the bottle of wine.
Yeah, that was great. We loved that. Was great. So what used to happen is we would put a magnum down on the table.
I think it was.
You drink as many glasses as you want. I mean, we come up with a measuring stick at the end and show you how much.
It was such fun. Had.
And then one day, a licensing officer, not even from a London borough, came in, had the whole experience, enjoyed it, and then took pictures and reported us to the local officer. And then they said, you can't do that. That's not within weights and measures. And we looked at various ways of doing it with etched bottles and all this sort of thing. We couldn't get an agreement with them, so we had to stop doing it.
What a shame. What a shame. And then how did you get into it then? Because I guess, you know, early on, and this is only from me listening to Spooning, and I think it was the Claudia Winkleman episode, you know, you were talking about TV and broadcasting and running and all that stuff. Mm. What was the flip then?
Well, what happened was, so obviously, like quite a few people of my generation within hospitality, I left school with no qualifications and, you know, and quite a serious drug habit. But that's in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so where do you get a job? You get a job in a kitchen. And, but I mean, I'm sort of making it sound quite basic there, but the, you know, the reality is, I grew up in a family that loves food,
yeah.
I'd always cooked. Yeah. Mum's a phenomenal cook. So it was something that I wanted to do and I felt like I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I went off and first place I ever worked was the Neal Street restaurant, Covent Garden. And actually about 3-4 weeks ago, I interviewed Gennaro Cantaldo, who was the head chef there then at that point.
Gennaro was in Jamie Gennaro.
Yeah.
Quick fact.
Yeah.
The new lady that I'm with.
Yeah.
Gennaro's on her list.
Really?
So I don't know if you can make, well, I don't know if I want, I don't want it to happen.
Well, I mean, what like a sexual
button? Well, I think it's a sort of, you know, one of those, you know, it's kind of like a weird crushies list.
Look.
Not that I'm saying it's weird.
Having known that man for over 30 years.
He's a beautiful
man. He's a beautiful man. And I'm not sure he'd say no.
Well, I've got to tell her this. Yeah, she's, Kasia, you're listening.
But it was lovely doing that interview with him because it was actually quite emotional for both of us as to sort of what has happened over those years. And but he really did instill a love of food. I mean, I worked at a few other places where they could remove it very quickly, but it, you know, I was really lucky that that was the first place that I landed because, you know, the passion for ingredients, the passion for food, the passion for the simplicity of proper simplicity of Italian food was all there on offer, and you know, and it was great. And it, look, I was a lunatic at the time as well, and you know, they sort of put up with it, yeah. And it was a great start and all, and. On and off, I worked as a chef for 20 years, ending up at the Groucho.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was exec chef at the Groucho up until 2003. And then I sort of met my wife and decided we should probably, you know, they decided we were going to get married because obviously as a man, you decide that first without sort of letting them.
I
think that's a weird one. I mean, I had this conversation with Made in Chelsea star Sophie Habu, mm-hmm. who is out on the podcast this week, about how as a guy, when you decide, oh, I've met the one, I'm gonna ask her. So you've made all the decision making, right? And then what happens is, you know, if you're doing it in the traditional sense, which I realize a lot of people don't feel is necessary now.
What's up these days, I think. Yeah.
So you set the whole thing up where you're going to propose, and you get the ring and you do that whole thing. And they're like, and you're like, will you marry me? And they have to make the decision there and then.
Yeah.
You take months over it.
Yeah.
And then what happens is, I think, or in my experience of what I've seen, which could be very different to other people's, is that person then becomes instantaneously the bride to be, right? So what happens is they sort of wake up almost a year later and they're like married, and they're like, hold on.
Yeah, those are talking heads.
And I think that's why a lot of people find the first year of marriage really difficult.
And then what about the Groucho then? So you must have seen some sights. Were you there at Britpop, or was it after Britpop?
It was 99.
Okay. Indie landfill.
You did see some extraordinary stuff. Yeah. I mean, one of the more extraordinary things was coming up from the kitchen one night, and they've got a piano in the main bar and a pianist who plays it. And standing round the piano, singing at the top of their voice as a trio, some of them not very well, was Bono, Courtney Love, and President Clinton.
Now, when George Clinton. Oh, no, wait. No. Someone different.
I mean, when are you ever going to see that anywhere? Where's that ever going to happen?
Yeah.
Anywhere other than
you'd stop taking drugs by then.
Yeah.
You weren't seen things.
I was clean and sober.
It actually happened.
Yeah. Clean and sober by then. But you're there going, nope, you're not going to see that anywhere else.
And, you know, and it's a no photos thing, and I did it in all these. Yeah.
Oh. And I may well get my membership revoked for taking that story. But,
What will you and Chuck get? I don't know if that'll happen. You'll be right. All right. So Groucho, and then you were getting married.
Yeah, well, then to what we were just talking about as well. So then the reason I stopped cooking was twofold. One, I was getting married and I'm thinking, do I want to be doing these hours? And also then I got ill. And I got a thing called toxoplasmosis, which is a parasitic blood infection that literally put me in bed for about 6 months. Yeah. And then got chronic fatigue thing, you know, post-viral syndrome after that. And unfortunately, during that period, the only thing it didn't affect was my appetite. So I was quite sedentary for about 18 months and woke up about 18 months later. At about 23 stone. And so during the first year of marriage, my poor wife, Susan, woke up a year later next to quite an overnourished, angry man.
Right.
So that needed addressing.
Yeah.
And we sort of brought it back together. And then, you know, then for a couple of years there, it was around about that time that my brother and I, who's my partner and co-founder, thing we've ever done. Since we started that partnership in about 2003, we had media companies, production companies and chauffeuring companies and all these different things that were all related to the media in some point. Yeah. And you know, during that period, I managed my dad and what he was doing and that kind of stuff. And that was a fun period. And then, you know, I was looking after a few of the chefs like Corrigan and Oliver Payton and without doing their media stuff for them. So it was an interesting period in terms of that, but I missed hospitality. I missed restaurants, missed that kind of thing. And as a result, you know, and Home Slice was born out of Flat White on Berwick Street. So I used to regularly go and get my coffee there when it first opened. And there was a young guy in there doing the breakfasts, and he kept saying to me, oh, you got to come and try my pizzas. I'm doing my pizzas. And this was Rye that started Home Slice as a street food concern. And eventually, by accident, I ended up going up there and trying it. I was like, no, they're very good. And then we sort of said, do you want to come in and do that indoors? And that's sort of how Herbs Life started. And we opened the first one in May of 2013.
And the Neil's Yard site, was that the Neil's Yard restaurant? Or is it a different
site? No, different site. That was some sort of weird little... it was like a terrible sort of salad, pizza, Italian type cafe. It was run by this extraordinary bloke,
right?
Who modelled what I would describe in the latest in old man, young man clothes.
Oh, okay.
You know, he was still in a Chevignon leather jacket. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, yeah.
And his shirt open quite low. Yeah. And a lot of sort of, he was going for the silver fox,
right,
but missing it.
Quite dramatically.
But I mean, honestly, when we gutted this place, it was unbelievable. Was uncovered.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, we opened it on such a shoestring, spent nothing. I mean, I think most of the kitchen was built out of balsa wood. Yeah. And so we gutted it, put a new floor in, everything. But, you know, we got that first one open for less than a third of what it cost us to open the second one.
Yeah. Why does that happen?
I think because you just lose sight of what's important and excited that you're expanding, you know, all that kind of thing. Someone told a really apocryphal, I don't know if it's true, story about Alan Yao when he was opening. Do you remember he opened Cha Cha Moon?
Whiteley's?
No, the first one was in Kingly Court.
Oh, was it? Okay, right. Yeah, I remember the Whiteley's one.
Yeah, so he was opening that, and his then operations person called into question the price of the light fittings. He said, you know, Alan, this is Chinese street food, and, you know, these light fittings are very expensive. To which he replied, we're not paying for them, you effing idiot. Whoever buys this office is paying for them.
Smart,
always been, you know, but you've got to admire him, always building to sell.
Yeah.
And I mean, that man changed a certain aspect of dining within this country. You know, he's so far ahead of the curve, and those brands that he created are still going strong, still super, super popular.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's interesting, the one in Whiteley's was next, I used to work at Yo Sushi, so it was next door to Yo Sushi, and I remember, like, there was all the rumors and, you know, the guys were slightly scoffing at it, but it was, I think it was £1 million fit out.
Mm.
And we used to have our meetings in there because no one was ever in there.
Yeah.
It was crazy. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we're a visionary, you're going to get that kind of wake of destruction.
Well, I think also the other thing is that the longer you are in this industry, you're going to get it wrong at some point. And that's just the law of averaging. You know, that thing where you can feel invincible. Everything I open is fantastic. Everything I do is
in your own supply.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fools.
No, and then, so what about the last 4 years then? Because I was lucky enough to have dinner with your brother the other month here at Rules Restaurant, and we got talking and this and that. And then he was chatting a little bit about, you know, how tough it's been, you know, especially during COVID and all the rest of it. So what sort of happened in that kind of period then?
Well, I think, like everybody, you're hit with a massive swathe of uncertainty when the first lockdown came, you're like, and you find yourself going, am I actually emptying all my fridges? And, you know, and we gave all the food to the Felix Project. But you're closing your restaurants. It was such a weird feeling. You're like, and you didn't know when you were going to open them again.
Yeah.
And then furlough came along, and that made that easier in terms of staffing and all that kind of thing. But it was difficult from an emotional point of view, because at that stage we had six restaurants and I think it was 173 staff. So we put 173 team members on furlough, and sort of sat around waiting. And then eventually it was like, oh, do you think we can open thing? And the thing is, also, you give people the option of furlough. Right? And I don't know if this was common to anyone else to talk about. So we got very excited when we thought, oh, we're going to open the Marylebone site for takeaway and delivery. So we put call out, we're going to open this. Who'd like to come and work? Right?
Crickets.
Out of the 133 people, 8 said yes. And you're like, go, guys. Thanks for that. And, you know, and there was, it had such a negative, I don't know anyone during that period who, if you didn't think between 2 and 25 times, do you know what, fuck this, I'll do this. You're either dead from the neck up or really rich or both.
Yeah. Scamming the business loans.
It was hard, you know, because everything that we knew and was normal to us was taken away. But I think also it's sort of putting yourself in the mindset where you're like, no, you have to get away from why is this happening to me to, all right, well, what am I supposed to learn from this? What can I learn from this? Yeah. And, you know, some lessons we were slow to learn and we paid the price from it. Mm-hmm. Others we pivoted quickly. And, you know, I mean, for example, Simplicity Foods wouldn't exist if lockdown hadn't happened, you know, because everyone's sort of bumbling around thinking of something to do or kind of thing. And that's when we got, you know, I'd known Neil from Rankin from before and we got talking and, you know, he wanted somewhere to kind of produce it. And, you know, we said, oh, I've got pick a loose breath. And it all sort of developed from there, you know, and that's now become something completely different. So I think it's you kind of have to keep that slightly Churchillian thing of, you know, if you find yourself in hell, keep walking. Don't stand still because basically can't hit a moving target.
Well, it was really interesting. I was working with the Shume when lockdown was happening and we were looking at the e-com business and all that stuff. And then obviously you guys were doing the sausages for the vegan breakfast.
Yeah. Vegan sausage naan.
Out of this world.
We're still doing it.
Out of this world. And I've told so many people, and what I liked about them, it almost was a haggis-y consistency. You know, it was really coarse and the oatmeal and oh my God.
Because they're made by a Scotsman.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just fantastic. And like, I know Neil in the passing to say hi to and whatnot, but I was always impressed with him that, you know, he did wear his heart on his sleeve a bit Scottish-wise, where, you know, the iron brew in the restaurant and all that stuff. And you're like, go on, son, because a lot of people don't, you know.
Hey, look, Neil's incredibly passionate. Excuse me a lot.
Yes, right.
Neil's incredibly passionate. And what he has created, I think, is close to genius in terms of that product because it's different to anything that's out there. And the whole thing that the whole reason we got involved in the discussions with Neil was, you know, as restaurateurs, particularly Neil, who had been lambasted by the vegan community for years, he's like, you take animals and cut them up and burn them, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was always very defensive of that because Temper had a really ethical approach to that. It was on-site butchery, whole carcass, you know, done properly. And to his argument was, look, we'd all eat a more flexitarian diet. I'm not eating that stuff.
Yeah.
Because what is that?
Yeah.
You know, because I always say it's like a lot of the plant-based alternatives out there at the moment, you turn the packet over, it's got 40 ingredients in it, and 38 of them you need a degree in food science to know what the hell they are. Whereas we took a revolutionary approach. We use vegetables.
Guess what?
Turns out they're quite tasty if you treat them right.
For what you're doing with them. And, you know, as I say, we ordered them and had them at home, and I was just absolutely blown away, you know? So in terms of Simplicity Foods, then what's everything you're doing with it? What are all of the products that, you know, are going?
Well, the reason that my lovely brother, who was supposed to be doing this with us today, is not here, is he's just been up in Crewe, discussing. So we are looking at a whole range of different products that we can produce, not necessarily ourselves, but license to other people to produce for us, but to our recipe, that kind of thing, and following the ethos of minimal intervention. So we're working with the company, and you know, we can't say who it is yet, but you know, we're hoping to be in retail by September of 24, and hopefully by the time this goes out, and if maybe someone's listening to it in, I don't know, November of 24, that's come true, but you know, nothing is a given.
Yeah.
But for example, the pie we have developed is phenomenal. It, you know, I don't know if you tried any of the flavored minces we do as well. That, I mean, like, what Neil and the team have done with those is just fantastic.
The flavored mince, how? What?
So imagine the mince that we use, the sausages. So they create just a standard ragu. I say standard, you know, that flavor profile. Chorizo, quima, Italian fennel sausage, chorizo, all of those things. And if I served it to you and didn't say anything, you wouldn't know.
Blindfolded, obviously.
Well, that is one of the other things.
One of your trademarks.
That was a funny thing, actually. A friend of mine was over from the States and I hadn't seen him for about a year or so. He was like, what are you up to? And I told him about the spooning podcast. And he went, so basically you blindfold people and abuse them. No. We talk about the food they think they love and the food that they think they hate. There is that element where you, if you remove sight from the equation, it's a very different experience. One of the guests who's on this week, Sophie Abu. So one of the spoons, which was the spoon she was supposed to love with all the ingredients she loves in it, we actually changed the motto. So now that I can't see it, I'm not sure I like it. Texture's horrible. Whereas the thing that she said she hated, she loved. So we've got about an 80-85% strike rate in terms of changing people's opinions on the ingredients they said they would never eat. Pain of death. Because if you can't see it, you've got to rely on your other senses, and it just really works.
You had the real pleasure of, you know, one of the last broadcasts with the Hairy Bikers as well, you know, God bless Dave. And like, that was a great episode. And I think, there was something he wouldn't try, egg white.
Yeah, hates egg white.
Yeah, he wouldn't even play.
Makes him dry heave. So in many cases, what it is it's a hangover from childhood.
Yeah.
And in many cases, it's down to the fact that whoever was the primary cook in the house when they were growing up wasn't very good at it. Yeah. And it's quite funny watching grown men admit their mums couldn't cook, for example. They're very reticent to do it.
It's a hard one. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, mine couldn't really. That, you know, like black Brussels sprouts, you know, it was just all the pots were burned. And yeah, so yeah.
Well, I mean, my dad grew up with a mum. His mum, Rose, God rest her soul, couldn't cook for toffee. Yeah. And her dad, his dad, who was a greengrocer, would essentially do sort of swaps with the other shops and whatever. So he'd bring back beautiful things from the other shops, hand them to his wife, who would then destroy them. he remembers, you know, the first time he ever saw a steak. His mother wrapped it in tin foil and stuck it in the oven.
Not ideal.
No.
A creative agency for the hospitality sector, Saved by Robots create compelling brands and memorable experiences through great design and engaging storytelling. From Scottish Restaurant of the Year Sugar Boat to Tipjar, the digital tipping platform that's taken over the world, Saved by Robots excel at bringing ideas to life. As well as developing new concepts and refreshing existing brands, the robots provide outsourced graphic design to help multi-site operators grow with confidence. Check out their work and get in touch at savedbyrobots.com.
Well, it was just interesting you talking about weight loss and things like that. And I heard you talking about this on the podcast, and I just really wanted to, it was a personal thing, really. And that last year I managed to lose 5 stone. It was a lot heavier. I've couple of weight, maybe ones crept back on. I broke a foot in the summer, so getting back into that now. But am I right in saying you're doing one meal a day now?
Yeah, I kind of tend to eat one meal a day. I mean, there'll be days where I just, like, you know, quite busy and running around, maybe having enough sleep the night before, suddenly go, no, I just need to eat something. But on the whole, it's one meal a day, and it's sort of where, whenever that presents itself to me. And then for that meal, I will eat like a Labrador, you know. I'll eat to the point of near,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
revulsion. But I, you know, over the years, I've been every size under the sun. I did me that too. As I was turning 50, I sort of got involved in this whole thing of fit as fuck at 50 was my plan. So get into the best shape of your life for the second half of your life. And I went off and did this whole transformation thing, and that all ended up in men's health. And the, yeah. I think Pizza Boss loses 30 kg. And I did. And I went, I got down to just under 7% body fat. Right. Now, the problem with that, Mark, is you look phenomenal naked, but in clothes, people think you're dying. Yeah. They will come up to you and go, Hey, I'm in the best shape of my life, really. And I look at the pictures of my face during that period. I don't look well. So, you get to a certain age, body or face, you can't have both.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember for my wedding, I got down to 12 stone 5, I think. And I looked horrendous, 6'2".
Yeah.
So I looked horrendous.
Like, my ideal weight is about 13 and a half, 14 stone. At the moment, I'm sitting at about 15. Yeah, but I'm, you know, I'm probably a stone heavier than I need to be. But it's winter. Yeah, I'll get into my fighting shape.
Raving weight.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the other thing as well is, having done that kind of extreme thing where, you know, you're eating sort of 1600 calories a day and you're counting your macros and all this kind of stuff, it's an interesting exercise to do. It's no fun for the other person to live with, because, you know, the guy, she's looking at it going, idiot's weighing his food again.
He sneezed. Yeah. He's going to be himself.
But I mean, Susan literally had people at school pick up going, how long's Mark got left?
Oh, Trace, really?
Like, what? You know, but I do look at the pictures. I mean, there are the pictures of me with my clothes off, available should you feel inclined to look up online.
Can we get some signed like the old radio days?
Exactly. And try finding an answer. And that looks great. Very proud of that achievement.
Yeah.
Or great, really grateful that I was able to get there. Mm-hmm. But it's no way to live.
Yeah.
When you see, and this is the thing, you know, and a lot of the truck that I have with social media and all of those sort of things is, like, we are sold a diet, commas, of unachievable stuff or stuff that just isn't real, right? So when that leading sportsman is or person is on the front cover of Men's Health, right, they don't look like that all the time. You know, unless you are in a constant state of diet and training, you won't look like that all the time. And I can't remember whose podcast. It might have been a Tim Ferriss one that I was listening to. And he had this guy on who was a fitness model. And he'd spent years obsessed with how he looked and his weight, what he was eating and all this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then one day he decided he had enough. But what he to enable him to get away from that mindset, he removed all the mirrors from his home and would shower in the dark so he couldn't observe his own body. Because that's how kind of twisted thing can get if you get into it. So body image, all of that kind of stuff, it's a difficult thing because we're sold images on a daily basis of how it should be. And and then it also sort of translates into, you know, when you see people cooking online,
yeah,
or or even on TV to a certain degree, there's a certain lack of reality about it. Because, you know, when you're watching the guy on TV, how good they are, the team of people who've made sure that what's, you know, going to end up in front of you. So you can get disheartened as a cook, and as a sort of home cook, you can get really easily disheartened. And it's like anything, just keep going with it. Well, you'll find your own way with it. And it's the same thing of how you look, what you do with your life, and just don't be afraid to fail.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. I was thinking about hospitality and recruitment and things like that, and I don't know if you heard of a movement called Hospitality Rising. I don't know if you heard about this. So I'd started that a couple of years back, and we are probably going to be looking to pause that soon because the industry just doesn't have the money to support. And also, you know, we really would hope that we could raise it from maybe other places, maybe it's some kind of grants or something like that.
What, like something weird, like the government?
I was reluctant to say, but yeah. And then, you know, hopefully things will change.
Happy to go on record as saying that when it comes to one of the biggest employers in the country, one of the biggest providers of a good time and a respite from where we are as a country and where we are as a people, we get little or no support at government level. We don't have a minister, and we should. They nail us on VAT, and every other country that celebrates its cuisine or whatever doesn't do that to its industry. And I think somebody needs to wake up in Whitehall and go, if we encourage this industry, we're so good at it in country as well. I mean, you look at, even in the face of what's going on, you look at the new openings that are going to happen. That's so interesting, so diverse, so clever. You know, we now, having been laughed at for years, country this cuisine, I think we lead. You know, there's very few places you can go in the world and eat as well as you can in this country. You know, because it's even, I mean, you know, my parents used to have a house down in southwest France, near the comedically titled Condom. You know, you think, oh, I'm in the sort of French heartland. Some of the restaurants were rubbish, like genuinely rubbish. Whereas certainly in central London and now beyond, falling over yourself for great food. Why would you not encourage that? Why would you not encourage young people to be part of that as well? And it's almost that weird thing where I was talking to, who is also someone we've done the podcast with, Michel Roux. And we were talking about MasterChef the Professionals. So he was on the first series. And I don't know if you watched that, but as someone who's...
Yeah.
Because it was an unproven concept. Some of the first people who were on that, you're looking at them going, sorry, you do that for a living? Oh, my God. And it, you know, geez, MasterChef, might want to think about the title. But, you know, over the years, it's developed into this thing where you've got seriously talented young people. But what's interesting, I've noticed, is a lot of those kids are proper middle-class kids. They're not, you know, like where a lot of the chefs used to come from, which was from more working class backgrounds. And I don't like to discuss class because I think it's such a crap thing, but it's just an easy anchor point for someone of my generation to sort of talk about it. But it's interesting. So it's almost like that kind of sector of society have cottoned on, this is actually a really good industry. And I can have a great career in it. Because if you're any good, you'll rise really quickly. You know, you will go. I mean, I've got guys who join the team as part-time you know, wait staff. Yeah. 3-4 years ago, who are now general managers, you know, and they're still in their early 20s because there is that opportunity within casual dining. You don't need to be in your mid 30s to manage a rep, you know, and, you know, and they're earning good money, you know. I mean, that everybody always wants to earn more. You know, the nature of it is you reach your, your spending will always reach your earnings and beyond. But I think there is so little encouragement at government level. You know, you've got all the different bodies that try and govern it on behalf of the industry, but they have no traction in government at all. And, you know, given the size of the industry, it is insane. And given the quality of the industry in this country, the great people who work in it, you know, when you talk to, like, the leading people in this industry, it's, you know, people like Tom Kerry or Angela or all of those people, it's like, they really care. You know, you're coming into an industry where people care. Yes, it is quite vocational. You've got to give a lot of your life to it if you want to succeed. But isn't that the same with anything that you want to succeed in?
10,000 hours and all that stuff. Yeah. Exactly.
So why not do it where you're surrounded by great food? Your job is to give people a good time, make people happy. You know, I always say, you know, when I'm doing the training with the team, and one of the first things I do is up on the screen, I'll put or hand out a piece of paper, depending on where we're doing it. And the first thing on the piece of paper is the Oxford English Dictionary definition of the word hospitality.
Is the example not something about Scotland? Yeah. I think, yeah.
Yeah. But the interesting thing, because I always say you work in hospitality. It's not a noun, it's a verb.
Right.
Right. It is about, and if you look at that definition, it uses the words kindness, generosity, a welcoming spirit. Yes. You know, all of these things that, you know, when that person, and you hear actors talk like this. I think it's Hugh Jackman says, whenever he's doing the theatre or anything, he finds a part of the theatre that he holds on to, and he just, like, actually part of the fabric of the building. And, you know, he tries to connect with that and connect with the fact that everybody who's walked through that door has, not first and foremost, they paid their hard-earned money to come and see him. So he owes them the best performance he can do, right? Because they may have been had a bad day. They may be in the middle of a bereavement. They may be celebrating something significant. So it's his job to make sure he makes that moment as good as possible. And that's our job in hospitality as well. When that person comes in, I always say to the team, it's like, when I walk in here, you all smile at me because you think I pay your wages. I don't. They do.
Yes. Yeah.
Be nice then. You can look at me and you know, give me the stink eye, whatever you want to do. As long as you're smiling at them, because they are the people who are making sure that you've got a roof over your head.
Yeah. Well, I remember I was at one of these industry conferences or something, and I think it was Mitchells and Butler CEO at the time, so was on the stage, and he said something brilliant, and he said, when people come and dine with us, they've made a decision probably not to do something else. So that money,
especially
that we're taking, yeah, I mean, and this was you know, years back, and he said, you know, they might be foregoing buying their kid football boots to come out for this meal. So yes, it's not haute cuisine or anything like that, but it's still got to be as good as we can possibly make it, you know?
And I would say, you know, and obviously when somebody is under that kind of pressure and they come into a restaurant, sometimes they can be a tricky customer. And, you know, I always say to the guys, it's like you kill them with kindness right up until the point where they are abusive to you. Because we are here to serve you. We are here to make sure you have a great time. We're not here to be abused by you. And nobody should have to take that in any environment. But, and there's also that thing, that customer that you win round from that feeling is one of your most loyal customers. I mean, you know, I always say his name wrong. Will Guyard, the guy from 11 Madison Park, Unreasonable.
Unreasonable, yeah.
I mean, you know, that's, I mean, I always love the Danny Meyer book, Setting the Table, but then Will has taken it another level, explaining what it is you're supposed to do and how you build a team to do that. And it's if you haven't read it, it's a beautiful read. Even if you don't work in hospitality, beautiful read. It's just such an understanding of the human condition and how to navigate it to the best of your ability.
Sort of put off by it because I've got it as an audiobook. I'm not very good at reading. I just take information a different way. But only because everyone was going on about at the time. You know, it's almost like you must go skiing. You must go to New York, and you eventually go, and you're, you know. So yeah, now I think's the time that actually I can do it without feeling like I'm just doing whatever else is doing. Yeah, I love it. I kind of like to turn left or whatever. But yeah, the Danny Meyer, the Setting the Table's a cracker, you know, and lucky enough to have one of his guys on before Mark Maynard opened a couple of restaurants. He worked for 30 years, you know, so that was excellent, you know. But I'm just looking out the window and there's a DJ setting up. Oh. So I don't know how long we've got till it's loud.
Until it starts going...
Or maybe it would make it better. Yeah, but how would that work?
Drown us too. Boring parts out.
How would that work with copyright, though? Right, well, last couple of things then, because I know you need to go as well. So I was just thinking about future plans for you then and what's next. So you've got Home Slice, you've got Simplicity Foods on the growth trajectory, if I can say it properly. You've got getting into broadcasting more, and also you'd sitting at Chris Evans quite a lot and things like that.
Well, I mean, Chris is... lucky enough to call Chris a mate, and he's a lovely man, and I've known him for, I mean, a long time. And you know, if I'm ever doing something interesting or different, very kind and lets me come on the show and bore people. But I mean, I'd like to do more radio. I think it's fun, and I think it's less important to me whether it works or not. Because I'm doing it, just be fun. Same reason you do this. It's fun, you know, and same reason. Well, but.
Not really.
The question of what value you put. But I think it is, I suppose it's now that I am getting older, it's just open to opportunities. It's like, you know, well, yeah, cool, I'll do that. Yeah, well, why not? You know, and if I fall flat on my face, I don't care.
Yeah. Do you have a dream slot of what you would have wanted to do?
Yeah, we'll just see whatever happens. I think it's also being, I think we can get stuck in what we don't have. And I think while we all sat around staring into our navels a couple of years ago, a lot of people settled in that area. Mm. But I think it is important to sort of, you know, I mean, I'm really lucky. I have a extraordinarily varied and interesting life, all of it really because of food. And that's why, you know, like you, I'm very passionate about getting people into this industry, because you have no idea where it'll ever take you. It can take you around the world. It can introduce you to people you would never meet, and it's got everything going for it. Really does. It's like, you know, I've got a 17-year-old son now, and as it stands at the moment, he wants to act for a living. Okay. And that's great, because he's always got hospitality, if that doesn't.
Yeah, I can come back, get a few chefs and all
those. But some of the greatest actors that never were are some of the best people in hospitality.
Yeah, I agree. Well, just when you're talking about, the going anywhere thing, one of the lines for Hospitality Rising future campaign was Start Here, Go Anywhere. Mm. And it was coined by Kenny Blair from Buzzworks up in Scotland. And yeah, that was definitely going to be, you know, because what we were trying to do was almost do Army Be the Best, but for hospitality, you know. But the Army spends 17 million on that a year.
Yeah.
We managed to raise one for it, you know. So it's King Kong and a fly, really. You know, we need 5, 10, 15 million a year over many years to convince people that it's a good industry. Like, it's not a one-hit wonder. You know, it's going to take a long, lot of hard work.
Well, I think the other thing is my concern is the next generation, certainly with the kind of development of working from home and all something, is the next generation aware of what it takes to be good at something?
Probably not. Well, it's been stereotypical, but yeah, in the main, probably not.
You know, and having how many, you know, going to the Malcolm Gladwell thing of Laz Nows, but, you know, how long it takes. I find a lot of people are quite impatient. I mean, I'm really impatient. Yeah. And then I'm blown away by how impatient other people are. I'm terrible trouble waiting for anything. But then I've also got that thing of, like, I suppose, age, where I realize it doesn't happen that quickly and I'm able to manage my own expectations in the scenario. But it's like people going, looking at you going, well, you know, oh, well, I want to be assistant manager. It's like, you've been here a month.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of that. And in marketing, you know, teams as well, same thing.
But also because of the competition for staff in the industry, thanks to Brexit, you know, someone else will offer them that position.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, one of the difficult things for us at the moment is what people are paying pizza chefs. And there's only a finite amount of money that you can charge for a pizza. There's only a finite amount of money that you can pay a pizza chef. You know, I'd love to pay everybody whatever they needed to live, however they wanted to, but it is a business. Has to hit a margin. And that thing where everyone's like, oh, everything's gone up by 30%. And I'm like, all right, well, explain to me why we make 50% less than we did 3-4 years ago.
Yep.
It's not 30%. Everything has gone up by 50% by the time you add in staff, food, you know, all your heat, light, all that sort of thing. It's a tough industry in which to make money now. It's interesting having Tom Kerridge on the podcast. You know, he regularly gets lambasted for charging 175 quid a head. Yes. He makes £12 off that.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember on Tom Louise Fish and Chips, similar breakdown. Mm. And yeah, I mean, I think I quite like this metric of value for quality rather than value for money. Mm. And if you're going to Tom Kerridge's, well, of course, it's not going to be like popping in for a Mackie D's. You know, it's a completely different ball game.
And it's the same thing. It's the same thing with our pizzas. You know, it's not the same as Domino's. It's not the same as Pizza Express. I might argue, from a buyer's point of view, it's better, and therefore it costs a bit more because we ship our mozzarella, our fiordalatte, and twice a week Naples. We use San Marzano tomatoes. We use, you know, high quality flour, and it's all produced on site in the restaurant. So it costs a bit more, but hey, you know, I believe it tastes better, and that's why we do it that way.
But also, as you say, people will only wear so much.
There's a point level where it's like, sorry, your pizza is how much?
Yeah. 45 quid.
Well, I've got a head pizza chef on 120 grand a year.
Yeah, do you want to meet him?
He's only a load more than me.
Right, before the DJ kicks on, then a couple of final questions. So we do a fun thing at the end, mark out of 10 questions. Aren't really marks out of 10. It was just really to ask you just some of your favourite things. So because we're talking about podcasts, have you got a favourite podcast?
I love Tim Ferriss.
Yep.
I like Huberman.
Uh-huh.
Andrew Huberman.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Elizabeth Day's How to Fail.
Yes.
I think is a great podcast.
I think the Adam Buxton episode was particularly good, I seem to remember.
I love The Dish with Angela and Nick. I think that's lovely. And Yeah, I mean, that's about as much time as I would have to listen.
No, that's great. Then, favourite city to eat in?
San Sebastian.
And any particular restaurant there that stands out?
I think it's slightly like shooting fish in a barrel. You can just, and it changes and moves, and, you know, and some of the ones that are more traditional that everyone says, oh, you must eat there. I've got to be honest, one of the filthiest meals I had in my whole life was in Mugaritz. Oh, my God. Well, it's part of that Basque cooking is they like quite gloopy, savoury textures. You know, when they arrive and they go, we take a different approach. We do not serve dessert. You should. Because this meal is incomplete.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going hungry.
I just didn't enjoy it at all. Spoken to a lot of people who were like, no, I didn't get that.
So Emperor's New Clothes slightly?
Well, no, it's just a different kind of thing. It just didn't. And I like that kind of, you know, I like sitting down and doing 38 courses. I can do that, but that was not it. Some of the courses were inedible, in my opinion. There we go.
And that was with your eyes open.
Yeah.
Favourite hotel?
Oh, favourite hotel. I think one of my favourite places I've ever stayed was on my honeymoon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Postin Ranch at Big Sur. California, incredible location, incredible restaurant, just incredibly expensive. And I've never been back since.
You've never been married since. So, yeah. favorite coffee shop? You talked about Flat White earlier. But
I love Flat White, but I also love Peter and Caffeine on Great Titchfield
Street. Yeah. He's a lovely fella.
And he's a lovely man.
Yeah.
So passionate about what he does.
Office was round the corner from it when I had an agency called We Are Spectacular, who actually the logo nicked Chris Evans' ginger specs slightly. So yeah, I better not get it. I think he's been shown it because David Campbell used to work with him at Virgin,
right.
And David was the chairman for Slightly Rising. He showed him it, and yeah, there was. So anyway, let's see what happens. But Chris is my broadcasting hero as well. Yeah. And then favorite bar or pub and/or pub both.
Favourite bar?
You still drinking?
No.
Are you done?
I'm drunk for 31 years.
What?
Yeah, 31 years. It's a paid up member of AA. But I tell you, where I do like is Tom Kerridge's place, The Coach in Marlow.
Yes.
It is a pub.
Yep.
But you sit at the bar and you eat. And you eat incredible food. So, if you maybe go to a pub, or... my brother-in-law's place in Gerrard's Cross, the Three Oaks.
Oh, okay.
It's very good.
Nice. And then last one, favourite restaurant, and what would you have there?
My go-to always is the Oyster Bar at Bentley's. Could think what they put up on that blackboard is still some of the most sort of subversively innovative cooking going on. Without trying to be too clever. Fiona, who heads that up for that kitchen up, Richard, is just a great cook. Oyster Bar at Bentley's, eat off the menu. Favourite new place is quite commonplace at the moment. I love what Osh and Ashley and everyone have done.
I was there yesterday. Devonshire. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
In fact, Osh was meant to be on the podcast yesterday, but I had a dental thing, and so I thought I'd be all numb, so I had to cancel. So, he's coming on the next couple of weeks, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He's great. What they've done there is fantastic. And it's huge.
It was five people deep wrapped round it at 3:30 p.m.
Yeah. And they've got their big weekend coming up.
Yes, indeed. That's going to be madness.
Yeah.
It's going to be madness. Yeah. Cool. All right. That's us. I'll let you go.
Well, you know, DJ hasn't started.
I know. We timed it kind of well, didn't we? Yeah.
He's turned a computer on.
Just about to go. Yeah, I think we've just done it in time. But yeah. But very millennial or Gen Z with a liquid death water up there as well. So yeah, there we go.
No.
Well, Mark, it's been a real pleasure to meet you. Thanks so much for spending the time. And catch you, please.
See you soon.
So there we go, fantastic podcast with Mark Wogan. So do check out Spooning the Podcast and you'll be able to get that anywhere you get your podcasts. I know podcasters hate saying that. Also, please check out Simplicity Foods and get yourself down to Home Slice if you can, if there's one near you or you're in a city that has them. But look out for that. I mean, the opulence and the luxuriousness and the inventiveness of what goes onto their pizzas is just incredible. It's a great sharing experience. So thanks to Mark again. Really one for me to remember. And I wish you well for your next chapters and all of the things that you're doing.
This podcast is sponsored by Vita Mojo, the all-in-one restaurant management platform helping operators grow ATV, reduce tech complexity, and serve guests better. Just visit vitamojo.com/supersonic and get in touch with the team right away. That's vitamojo.com/supersonic. So this is me, Mark McSee, signing off for another podcast, and I'm really looking forward to the next time we're together. Next time, we'll hear from many, many more interesting people with top tips, tricks, and tales that will make your brand boom.